Over the past few decades, Israel has spared no effort to change the demographic makeup of occupied Palestinian territories. In flagrant defiance of international regulations, the regime has pressed ahead with its construction of settler units, destroyed historical sites, and expelled the local Palestinian population. Now, in an apparent crackdown on the opponents of its expansionist policies, Israel is targeting leading rights group Amnesty International. The regime is reportedly preparing to sue Amnesty and impose bans on the group's financial resources for its move to endorse a growing boycott campaign against illegal Israeli settlement products. Amnesty's deputy director for the Middle East and North Africa called such reports, quote, deeply alarming. Magdalena Mughrabi said the move would be the latest effort by Israeli authorities to silence organizations and activists who criticize the regime. Separately, another prominent rights group, Human Rights Watch, has issued a report accusing five largest Israeli banks of being complicit in the regime's illegal settlement constructions. Bank Hapoalim, Bank Leumi, First International Bank of Israel, Israel Discount Bank, and Mizrahi Tefahat Bank lent money to home buyers, settlement councils, or companies that carry out construction in the occupied West Bank.
Of course, these banks should be sanctioned. You know, they're partaking in a breach of international law, and as you know, international legislation states, corporations who partake or support in war crimes or breaches of international law should, like those regimes, be sanctioned and punished. I don't think because they're banks they should be exempt from this. You know, you'll often see, especially within the West, as you saw with the credit crunch, that banks were kind of exempt from any criticism or sanction. But you know, certainly within the latest issue growing in apartheid Israel, banks should be sanctioned.
While these banks are not required to provide such financial services for settlement construction, Human Rights Watch said they had continued to do so regardless of their human rights obligations. Four of the mentioned Israeli banks are members of the UN Global Compact, a group of companies that calls on its members to, quote, make sure they are not complicit in human rights abuses. The United Nations has, in a new report, came down hard on Israel's decades-long occupation, blaming it for, quote, de-development and deteriorating human rights conditions of Palestine. The report has cited continued loss of land and natural resources to settlements and the annexation of land in the West Bank as the primary reasons behind Palestine's economic stagnation.
I think the report is long overdue. You know, when it's a 50-year-long occupation, it has prevented the development of Palestine in many aspects. First of all, economically, the Palestinian economy has never had a chance to grow, whether it be from Israeli settlers, the ethnic cleansing of people from their land, stealing their capital, their cattle, destroying their communities, such as the nature of Israeli capitalism, that Palestinian workers will have to go to Israel to work.
Today, more than 500,000 Israelis live in over 120 illegal settlements, while the construction of thousands more units was approved. Despite international outcry over the issue, the U.S. has on numerous occasions shielded Israel from being held accountable for its violations of international law, which is in line with the regime's plan to Judaize Jerusalem al-Quds.
The U.S. monthly bombing campaign in Afghanistan has hit a five-year high. The U.S. Air Force dropped more than 500 bombs in the country in August, an average of 16 bombs per day. Military.com reported that more than 2,000 bombs have been dropped on Afghan soil this year alone. almost double that of last year. The intensified bombing appears to have resulted in a higher civilian death toll. According to the UN, two American airstrikes in the last week of August killed at least 24 civilians, wounding 16 others, almost all of them women and children. The UN has already recorded a 43% rise in Afghan civilian casualties from aerial strikes in the first 6 months of 2017. More than 2,200 Afghan civilians have been killed in U.S. bombings since Donald Trump came to power in January.
This is an indication of Trump, what he's up to. It's frightening that he did the same in Syria. He just all of a sudden started bombing, and also in Iraq. Hundreds of were killed, more than already in all of last year, or under the final year of Obama. Trump, within a few months, had killed more.
Backtracking on his election promises, Donald Trump is now dropping bombs on Syria and Afghanistan, two conflicts Trump insisted that he would abandon in order to focus on America first.
He was promising good things. He was promising an end to wars. He was promising to make peace with Russia. He's promising to work together with Russia to solve the Middle East problem. And he's being forced to back down.
In April, however, the massive Ordnance Air Blast missile, the largest non-nuclear bomb ever, was dropped on the Afghan mountains in fighting the Taliban to show how unpredictable Donald Trump could be. Meanwhile, Trump, veering from his previous position of disengagement, is now sending 3,500 additional troops to the country. During a recent visit to Beijing, the Pakistani Foreign Minister, Khwaja Asif, pointed out, "It is our firm view that there is no military solution in Afghanistan. The focus should be on a politically negotiated settlement." Analysts believe that by bombing distant places with displays of death and destruction, Trump is going to send signals to North Korea. Such signals may be high-tech and sophisticated on TV, but they are all terrorists in nature as they are aimed to achieve political goals through acts of violence. The war in Afghanistan is now the longest in American history, and it's not going well.
I mean, the bombing is, of course, outrageous, and it really shows the bankruptcy after, 16 years now of invasion and occupation. It shows that it's a complete failure.
According to Daniel Coates, Director of National Intelligence, the U.S. intelligence community assesses that the political and security situation in Afghanistan will almost certainly deteriorate through 2018, even with a modest increase in military assistance by the U.S. and its partners. Last week, hundreds of Afghans protested against the U.S. military's distribution of offensive leaflets near Bagram Airfield. The leaflets showed a lion chasing a dog wrapped in the Taliban flag, which contains a passage from the Holy Quran.
Well, my first reaction was, well, who is the lion and who is the dog? It seems to me that the lion is the Taliban. I mean, it's a kind of not a very nice lion, but it's Afghan sovereignty. And it's trying to chase out the dog. It's almost like Maoist propaganda from the 1960s, the running dog lackey.
There have been several other examples where U.S.-led coalition forces have caused offenses in Afghanistan, throwing the country's sovereignty into question.
And they lost their sovereignty right in 2001. And I think it's just very bad politics for non-Muslim conquered to come in and occupy a Muslim country, which is basically what the U.S. did.
The U.S. has been bombing unstable Muslim states, including Afghanistan, for 16 years, delivering nothing but death and anarchy. So far, it has won no battles and gained no territory, but only inflamed anti-American sentiments across the region and the world.